Hello and welcome to On the Corner, the official podcast of PitcherList.com. I'm your host, Eric Samulski, joined, as always, by the man himself on this just auspicious of nights. It's Nick Pollock.
What is happening?
Not much. I just you like made a face at me because I stumbled the intro, but like some random number keeps trying to FaceTime me and I keep hitting reject and they keep repeatedly trying to FaceTime me. It's real weird. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, you should probably block that number.
I should.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Just like everyone's going to block me after they see my top 350 rankings. By the time you're listening to this, it will be out, I think.
It's a lot of pitchers.
Yeah. It was 300, and I want to really make everyone aware here. These ranks are what I've been doing for those rotation breakdowns. It's why those are behind the PL Pro paywall, because I normally don't share that. And I was like, you know what? This is a bonus article, because this isn't me like putting something out regularly and then just not doing it. These are just the blurbs that go into the top 300. So what's taking so much time for me is that there are slight changes I'm making since I started writing them in like November for certain guys. And it's kind of frustrating where like I keep going back and forth on a certain guy. And eventually I'm just saying, absolutely not. And it's really funny. I think Mitch Keller was one of those for me that was like, oh, I'm too low on him. No, I'm too high on him. No, I'm too low on him. No, I'm too high on him. Now I'm like, yeah, no, I don't want Mitch Keller because he has a 60% ICR on his four seamer. And it's just like, it's a dead zone four seamer. And it's just, I can't do that. But this top 20, I'm not even kidding you, Eric. It is 9 o'clock and I am doing that last ironing out of everything to make sure that I feel great about this. As everyone who's done the list, watched on the stream knows, I've changed like a few things here and there. And I finally feel like I have a good structure for what my top 20 is. And yeah, you guys probably already guessed some of the things right. You might guess some of them wrong. I've been back and forth on a lot of it, but yeah, I'm excited. We're going to do it today.
We're going to go right through it. Yeah, I just want to say before we jump in, like we did my top 100 the last time, talking to you and just talking through that stuff, I thought was an invaluable exercise, because it just enables you to like crystallize the things that you think. Even like when you're saying the words out loud, you're like, I don't know that I actually buy that as much as I thought. Right. Or just hearing somebody kind of have another opinion, either makes you go, yeah, you know what? Nick's wrong. Like I'm backing this even more. Or you're like, oh yeah, I didn't see that part of it.
Yeah. What Eno said is I had to do blurbs for his on The Athletic. Like he finally added blurbs this year, and he said something that I cannot agree more with, which is you'd make better analysis when you have to write things. Yeah. And it's the same way about explaining it with someone else too. You know, you don't really know something until you can teach it. And that means you really understand at its core and you believe that, right? So I, writing these out again and being like, okay, what were the words I said I wrote out? And I'm saying to you now, maybe not. And you can actually feel the interior pain and conflict.
You mean Eno from your other podcast?
I know.
Your other number one baseball podcast?
I don't believe that. I'm still trying to understand how. Because there's no
cool
way.
I'm on the corner with Nick. Oh, Nick left me and now is the number one.
I'm
podcast
not leaving you. Are you kidding me? No, that's actually also, we are doing like a touch of fantasy now on that one, but really that's just a baseball podcast. That is not really supposed to be that.
But and, I will say for people who are interested, if you haven't heard it yet, it is a baseball podcast, but it's also super useful. And if you really dig listening to people talk about pitchers who know pitchers, you can listen to this podcast, obviously. And then you can also listen to that one as well. I'm in the middle of the first episode right now. I dig it. I love this. I laughed out loud the second Eno was like, Kyle Harrison. I was like, oh, I know Nick. I know what Nick's going to say about this.
Oh, man, Eric, look at us, huh? Like, great. I remember when you first came on and everything, and we're like figuring each other out. And I'm like, oh, yeah, we know. We know what we like and we don't like now. This is so fun.
Yeah, we got him. So we got four. We got the top 20 guys. We got some tiers for today. We are going to break things down. We are going to make nickname the tiers. We're going to do all of the good things. The big news, obviously, recently was the trade of Corbin Burns to Baltimore. Mm-hmm. He now has to uproot and move from Milwaukee to Baltimore. So what I would like you to do is your tiers are going to be named after cities that you might move to if you had to leave New York.
Oh, that's one year of no. Okay.
I understand. Well, that's the saying. I understand the obvious answer is I'm not going anywhere. But we've all had that like one, you know, that one afternoon where it's like 19 and the wind is howling through the buildings and you're like, yeah, but where, but where would I? So that's what we're going to do. We're going to jump right in here. The tier number one is the top four guys for Nick. It is number one, Spencer Strider. Number two, Garrett Cole. Number three, Corbin Burns. Number four, Zach Wheeler. What city is this tier and why?
I don't know, man. They all suck.
The cities or the pitchers?
The cities!
Because this is the top four, so if they all suck, it's just
I've always felt like, I mean, man, this stinks. Okay, look, guys, you have to understand, I'm born and raised in New York. You don't want to hear this right now. You're trying to get all the top 20 pitchers. I'm going to waste so much time on this. I want to say Boston, but I can't say Boston because I don't really like Boston. But it's just not big enough. It's not a big enough thing. San Francisco is pretty cool. I always felt like if I were to go somewhere, maybe San Francisco's nicer out. You know, that's cool. LA, it's nice, but dang, I hate how like spread out and ridiculous. I can't do it. Austin, honestly, it might be Austin. Austin's pretty cool.
Let's go with Austin.
Yeah. And we're not going to talk about a Houston pitcher though. Anyone from Texas here. Spencer Strider, obviously, at least I think with the strikeout stuff, you'll see inside of the blur river for Cole. And if you listen to the craft, like I'm kind of scared about Cole, which is so weird. And the thing is, I don't even love, like, I have reasons to be concerned about every single pitcher. And I hate that feeling. You know, like Spencer Strider still gets hit pretty hard on his fastball. And I don't know, maybe it's just me being stupid in internal gut, but like, I feel like he's going to get hurt. And I feel like Garrett Cole's health is better, but it's also just Garrett Cole, your slider just got way worse last year. You lost IVB and worse adjusted VAA last year too, which is just not good. And your four seamer didn't exceed a 13% swing strike rate against lefties or righties. Like that's not supposed to happen. So that's weird.
Are you not? So obviously these are the top two guys. I don't think anybody has an argument beyond that. For me, I went with Cole because I value the depth of the arsenal a little bit more than with Strider. I feel like the foundation is a little safer. I appreciated the cutter and its ability to limit some of the home run issues that he had in the past.
That was so far down though. That's the thing that scared me. He's like, it's now a 0.8 homer per nine. And do I really believe that Garrett Cole is going to be that?
Probably not, but it'll be better. I guess but isn't Strider still probably going to be like a 3.6 ERA guy?
I don't know if that's necessarily true, right? I mean, it was 3.86 last year. It's not going to be a 3.86. We know this.
No. But what about all the, I mean, listen, we talked all about the ICR. Like if he only really has two pitches, then when it gets hit, it's going to get hit harder.
The best part about the ICR though, like I'm looking at 41%. And if you have a 37% K rate, you know, that does eat into it. You know, Alexander Chase's hard contact that we proficiently show on the site. He was pretty much saying, look, by the percentage of play appearances that result in just hard contact, it's 19%. That's third best in the majors. Mm-hmm. ICR is something that does scare me as far as, all right, you are more susceptible to the long ball and that damage than I would like you to be. So y'all think that Spencer Strider is going to be a sub three, but no, he should be low threes. Like low threes, a good whip because of all those strikeouts and a low walk rate. Like it's fine. He still has 7 hit per nine. So, all right. So he's number one. Pitching for Atlanta is great too. Okay. Cole, a little worrisome, but yeah, the health track record. He's still, you know, maybe the cutter is good. Maybe the cutter is bad. Maybe, you know, was suggesting that messed up the four seam. That's what Fast used to talk about with Yankee pitchers was that their four seamers are getting worse because they're doing the cutter and going too much on the side of the ball. But then there's Corbin Burns, right? I originally had him at four. I think we did when we talked about this. Mm-hmm. We convinced each other to do Corbin Burns at four. I just think moving to Baltimore just helps too much. It's a better park to pitch in. I know you're not getting the NL Central, even though it's a balanced schedule, still benefits you to being the NL Central still over the AL East. I do like to think that Adley Rutschman and the whole environment of the Orioles, it's a more winning ball club than the Brewers. It's also a very competitive team in a contract year and just feels like Burns is just going to go ham, you know? Like, I could even see an argument of, like, this being the SP1. But it's also the fact that Burns has elements that he can fix from last year. I outlined it all inside of the article, but his strike rate on his curveball should be better. His locations could be just tweaked a little bit. There's just a lot of little elements that I think on every single pitch, Burns could be better than what he was last year. And he still had a 3.39 ERA with a 107 whip, right? PLV has notoriously for two straight years in our player projections been down on Burns. As I've said before, we put the thumb on the scale and said, okay, Burns cannot be projected at a 24 and change strikeout rate. All right, we need to fix our projections. That's what we said last year. And what do you know? He had a 25.5. And so this year, PLV projections has, I think, Corbin at like 16th starter. Now, keep in mind that is coming out tomorrow. That's our V2 of our PLV projections for all players, which is awesome. It uses pitch modeling to infuse with this traditional methods of projections. We love it. So check out PL Pro and you'll get that with the auction draft calculator when PLX launches. Actually, it's today. When you're listening to this, it's today. It just happened. It's PLX day. What up? I'll never say that again. Okay. Corbin Burns, no, he's my number three now. And it's a good situation. And I just feel like he's going to soar there. You know, they got their new orange Burns.
Their new orange Burns. Yeah. I love all that. I think obviously everybody makes a big deal out of the new slider in the second half as well. I think that's huge. That's for him. And I'm fully on board. And then I think we both agree that like Wheeler is just kind of like a nice little steady Mr. Consistent. I guess I'd ask why you didn't have Cole and Strider in their own tier. Do you feel like that Burns and Wheeler are legitimately close to them, or you just didn't want to do two tiers of two?
I feel that, I just said that Burns has an argument.
I guess I didn't know if you truly...
Wheeler versus Cole is like pretty similar, honestly. 27% K rate, 192 innings last year. I mean, sure, there's a little expected strikeout take up for Cole, but I mean, 3.61 ERA, I think, should come down for Wheeler. 108 whip, like tons of wins. Wheeler's just been so consistent. And looking at this with my number five and going on, all of the other ones have more question marks. And I feel like these are the four that are your most confident in for 2024.
Agreed, for sure. I split it into two tiers in the top, but I fully agree with you on these top four. So we're going to move into another tier that might be more interesting in terms of some arguments, disagreements, movers and shakers. This tier is Pablo Lopez, number five, Luis Castillo, number six, George Kirby, number seven, Kevin Gausman, number eight, Zach Gallen, number nine, Logan Webb, number 10, and Aaron Noah, number 11. What city, state, country is this tier?
Do you know about Alex Fast saying movers and shakers?
No.
You didn't. Oh man, no. I think like every single cast, I think Fast would say movers and shakers, and it always just cracks me up.
It's just something about the
movers and shakers. You know the way he would do it and lean into it. Just as
I know about his cha 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 video.
Oh yeah, so actually, even today, Fangraphs had an article some teams movers and shakers, and all I had to do was send him the screenshot. I didn't even say a caption or anything like that, and he just starts cackling away. The movers and shakers. Yeah. I mean, the big one here, I'm just going to say San Francisco just because I was saying like that would another city. Cool. it's nice. You know, it's over expensive, unfortunately. And that's why I'm not going to get these guys on my teams. Hey, maybe not Pablo Lopez, though.
That's true. He's going later
than the others. And I love that. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people are going to be surprised that I came around on Logan Webb. And
that was going to be my question.
And that's the thing is, look, I go back and forth about what my strategy should be inside of drafts. Okay, I don't want to go for something kind of more boring. Should I be chasing after a guy, et cetera, et cetera. And this year in particular, I feel there are very few that you can really rely on for 190 plus of just production. And you just put them in and it's good. And it's not just like a Toby. It's just, no, this is actually pulling you in the right direction. And Logan Webb just does that. I wasn't a believer at first of him being a more sinker changeup, but I mean, he did it. And like, it's rare, it's unique. And a lot of times you see unique and weird, and it's just, okay, that can't happen. No, when you have a changeup, you can throw over 50% of the time, actually, in some games, over 60 in a single game, like 60 changeups in one game. And it's super effective. And you're so good at locating it down. that means that the sinker that had a 30% called strike rate, it might actually hold because you mirror it so well with that changeup. They just don't know if this is going to go under the zone or stay in the zone, and it's harder. And it's just, oh, cool, that's great. And he did this last year effectively without the slider working. Right. And I'm going to take a leap and say, you know what? I think Logan Webb's going to have a better slider this year. Just because I can see that he's tinkering with it. I can see that he's messing around with it. He's going to go so deep into games. He's going to have higher win chance because of it. I wish the Giants were a better offense, but it's still Oracle Park. And I just think that when looking at the other names we're going to talk about inside this top 20, I mean, I have other guys who I expect to go every 5 days and to go six innings, right? It's pretty much just what I say. Are you going to go every 5 days? Yes. Are you going to go? Do I expect you for six innings every time? Yes. Okay. That's Zach Allen and Gausman and Kirby and Castillo and Lopez. Sure. And do they have higher strikeout rates? Yes. Okay. There you go. So that's why they're there. And Nola's underneath him at the end of this one, because this is like, really, I put the line at who do I think at 180 to 200 plus guys with good ratios and going to flirt with 200 strikeouts, if not more. Like, those are the guys. Mm-hmm. I don't really think that anyone else here am I saying yes for all of those boxes. Aaron Nola, you might have some pushback, but Logan Webb is just safer. And that's, hey man, there's nothing wrong with that. You're not going to be harmed having Logan Webb on your team. So
yeah, I moved him up to 12th for me after we went through my top 100 for mm-hmm. much the same reasons. You know, we've talked about this enough that like, I do have some concerns, not particularly with Webb, because I think he's good, but like moving guys up just for volume, if they, you know, if you're assuming a certain level of health, right? So you're assuming, oh, I'm going to get 180 out of so-and-so.
Yeah, no,
and if you that's don't, a good point. If you don't get that, and their production is tied so much to innings, yeah. then they become a far less valuable pitcher. And we talked about the risk in general of those guys. So absolutely. There is a point where I say, okay, I know, like, and I think Aaron Nola kind of is that for me. Mm-hmm. I have him lower where I'm just like, okay, I think the innings are going to be there, but I don't know that they're going to be as good of innings as some of the guys who I put above him. And so like, if he only gives me 160, for whatever reason, injury or, you know, something. Mm-hmm. I mean, it would be injury, but he'd just be far less valuable than 140 from, you know,
your boy Tyler Glasnow.
One of the guys who we'll talk about later.
Glasnow
is one of them, but I also like, you know, we will talk about later.
Yes.
And another guy who I guess I won't even bring up because I just peaked and we're not even going to talk about him on this podcast, which is wild to me. Actually, two guys.
I know.
Two.
Yeah, I wrestle with this a lot, and we're going to talk about that in the next one. Yeah. By the way, we should say this. Hey guys, it is February, and we have 350 pitchers to get through. How are we possibly going to do this by opening day? Well, if I can say a sentence, opening day, Eric and I are going to be doing two of these a week, which is great. We're trying to get through this in an hour, not 2 hours. So that two-hour podcast you heard last time, nope, we're done with that. We're just splitting it in half.
Yeah, we're going through it. That's gonna be great.
Yeah.
Sorry. And you've heard us talk about a lot of these guys already. So, you know,
there you go.
Check the other podcasts. Obviously, you know, Nick has a bunch in his blurbs and I'll have my top 100 that have these blurbs too. But I'm excited about this next tier. So we'll get to tier number 3, which starts with pitcher number 12, Yoshinobu Yamamoto, his teammate, number 13, Bobby Miller, number 14.
After this break. Who is number 14, Eric?
I love that everybody knows because you intentionally put the suspense here rather than after the full tier, which is what I was going to do. Because number 14 is Cole Reagans.
Oh, man. Yeah, I know.
Nick wanted an intro for him. Number 15, Grayson Rodriguez. And number 16, Tyler Glasnow. It's going to be hard for you to get a tier for this city because it requires a city that makes you giddy, which doesn't exist apparently other than New York.
All right, let's say Philadelphia. It's always crazy. It's always a wild time, you know, and you don't know if you're safe.
All right. And that lands for this tier. So let me just ask. He's the biggest name on this tier.
Mm-hmm.
Yamamoto, where did you come down on ranking him? Because it's the biggest question, right? Of like, we've yet to see him. We don't have the track record of watching him pitch like some of these other guys. We know, we understand what we've been told and what we've seen from the World Baseball Classic is the upside. But you're trying to temper that with like new league, new country, new whatever. So was this like at some point I just have to place him in this tier because he belongs with this group, or did you have a pretty firm understanding of where you wanted him to be?
So this is something how I operate with the list and doing rankings for, oh my gosh, this is going to be my 11th season. This is dumb. How do we get so old? Is I really do like grouping guys. I think we can get very, very tied up in one versus one. And instead, if we just say, cool, this kind of player, and they just get a general sense of them and put them together, I can put Yamamoto at 12. And if there's someone that you like more in the next tier, that makes sense because it's just a different framework, right? So, and that's why I have tiers. And it's weird to even say tiers at times. Sometimes it's just groupings and not really like, I like all of this more than that one. But with Yamamoto, I pretty much sat down and said, yeah, I don't really expect more than 150. I actually am thinking about this a lot of a prospect coming up for a rookie season because he's young and it's a 10-year deal. The Dodgers don't want to push him. And they also recognize that he doesn't have the same workload. Actually, I'm going to say that Bobby Miller is going to get more innings than Yamamoto this year. That's what I think is going to happen because Bobby Miller actually threw about 120, actually maybe more than that last year. And he would be on that track for like 160, 170 normally. And you're going to see a six-man rotation be really tough to hold on to for the Dodgers. They're going to try as hard as they can to do it. They have actually a lot of prospects for it. But I feel like if there's a guy, they're going to be like, okay, you know what? We're going to let you go in this five-man run once. It could be Bobby Miller. Because you have Glasnow, who we don't expect to last. We have Yamamoto, who's not used to the every 5 days, who's also young. Actually, I don't know who's older, Bobby Miller or Yamamoto. I should know that. I would think it's Yamamoto, but maybe not. You have Walker Buehler, who are already limiting. We have Paxton in there, Emmett Sheehan, right? Like, this is not a well-seasoned workhorse rotation. So that's where I am with Yamamoto on this. I want to believe that he is more seasoned as far as just, yeah, I have full command on all my pitches, and this is great. Mm-hmm. And that's why I have him at 12. There is a big instinct that I had of putting Bobby Miller at like 10. I'm not even kidding. It's just because I think it's going to be the six-man rotation. By Miller slider?
Yeah.
No.
Because we both have written and talked about like it should be better than it is.
And we normally do see second season slider command getting better.
And he tinkered mid-season. Like he tried to throw a sweeper and then he kind of dialed back on that at the end. So like he's very clearly working on that slider, which makes me like optimistic about him getting another level. But obviously it's one of those things where you perk up and you see that like the performance maybe doesn't match what we should have gotten, can get him there, et cetera.
Yeah. It's Bobby Miller, I think, has just like these little tweaks to make. Four seamers should be more upstairs. He's made for that. His sinker is really hard to hit because everyone thinks it's the four seamer. It changes just a little bit enough and ICR rates are really low, and that's great. Curveball is fine. I mean, I'm cool with that pitch, and he had to use a little bit more than I think he wanted to last season because the slider wasn't as dependable as we want to be. And we also saw like he flashed plus with the changeup too. Not consistent, but it's there. Mm-hmm. And I just think more time with this, great situation in the Dodgers. I mean, Yamamoto and Miller are really that transition between the previous tier and this tier because they are some pretty safe to me, but also the fun tier. And that leads to Reagans and Rodriguez, who are absolutely like the ridiculousness of fun, but also, I mean, they have a higher ceiling because they are going to go every 5 days. Mm-hmm. They actually have 180 inning potential this year. I don't see them getting shut down personally. So I thought I was going to be lower on Reagans. I thought I was going to be like, no, Nick, you can't do this. X, Y, and Z. I initially did. And then I was just like, the other ones in this tier, Reagans is so dang good. I cannot express this enough. It's absolutely mind-boggling the depth he has. And I thought I was going to be lower on him after talking to him. Some people think that when I talk to a pitcher, I get higher on them. Actually, a lot of the time I get lower on them because I don't expect them to, like, I make sometimes like assumptions of what of stuff. And I know it's a little arrogant, I guess, of like, oh, cool, I want them to do the thing I want them to do, which is ridiculous.
Sure.
But there are also times where I hear guys say things or they're just like giving vague answers. And it's like, no, this isn't it kind of thing. And Reagan's was like, so there. If you watch that interview, it's on YouTube now. Like, he's so hyper. He has a notebook like Pablo, and Twitch chat freaked out about that.
Yeah.
Not Twitch chat. I'm sorry. Playback chat freaked out. He has a notebook. So I actually really believe that, like, Reagan's is someone that didn't just hit like a peak and then that's not him at all.
Right.
Like, this is the guy. This is who he is. Yeah. And I'm so excited for that.
I agree on that. My only two pushbacks on Reagan's are team context, which is minimal. I mean, I think, you know, you deal with some wins.
But no, like, that's, I think
we've,
I think
already talked. Yeah. We already talked about, like, you don't really want to punish guys too much for that, because if you're a really good pitcher, teams need to win some games.
They're going
to
win more games this year too.
It would be him. I also think, I think if we're dinging some other guys for health, I think we need to ding him a little bit for health. And I understand that, like, the two surgeries were essentially one surgery,
right?
Because he had the botched Tommy John, which they did again. But I'm also just thinking, and listen, I guess that makes him as injury prone as, like, you know, Pablo, or maybe you don't want to say Tyler Glass now, but like some of the other guys who were freed, right? Some of these other guys who were digging for injuries. My other concern is that, including the minor leagues last year, he threw 105 innings.
Mm.
So what is the real possibility that he goes over 150? Because a jump from 105 to 160 or 170 is big. And if you are the Royals, and very clearly the Royals are thinking about their future because they just gave that massive deal to Bobby Witt. And so if you're looking at Reagan's and you're seeing a 26-year-old who could be your frontline ace for years, and you're getting to the second half of the year and you are not in contention, and I think many of us don't expect the Royals to be in playoff contention, do you say, hey, this guy has had major arm surgeries already, maybe we shouldn't push him to 170 in a season where we're not competing and we want to make sure he's good to go for years?
Two pushbacks to that. One, bold prediction, I've already locked in. Royals win the AL Central. Lugo and Waka are going to help out the rotation a bit. They can add something at the deadline. Not the most competitive division. And I think their offense does get better. Two, I mean, I don't know if that's a bold prediction. I understand your point completely. But
I mean, better. I think they're
not,
better. Yeah.
Not out of the question is all my point there. But really, the pushback I have, the true one, is that 105 is different than a normal 105 because it wasn't him as a starter. It was him in relief and actually regularly throwing with the Rangers before transitioning. Sure. And normally when we see 105, we see that due to injury. We see that due to either getting shut down, everything like that. That wasn't Reagan's. Reagan's pitched. But Reagan was on regular through the entire year. Even in the minors, like it wasn't a 105 of just, you just didn't get the volume. If you combine that with being a reliever, that's more intense innings than the 105 would suggest in the first half.
But
so I think sure, they're going to go five games with him.
Yes. I get the intensity argument. That's a really good point. I guess my thought is still just in terms of the overall strain on your arm for a pitcher who has already had a major surgery. And fully get your point on, and listen, we're picking nits to a certain extent. I mean, I have Reagan's 25th. I could see myself moving him higher. I'm a fan. So it's more just a matter of, like, if we're saying there's some innings concerns of some of the other guys, I have similar concerns for him. Like, it wouldn't shock me if he came in at 150 this year. And I think they're going to be 150 good innings. And so, as I've mentioned many times on this podcast, I will take 150 good innings over, you know, 180 mediocre ones.
If you're saying it's a shutdown, that's a little different than IL, of course, which is a benefit to Glasnow. One last point that I meant to add before is look at how the Royals treated Reagan's last year. And I think that's an indication of how you're going to treat them this year, because they were sending him out in games that he should not have been in still. They were not babying him.
Yeah.
They were pushing him past 95 in situations where he should have been out of the game. Look at that Jays game and the Astros game and so on. And to me, that's just a showcase of, like, yeah, no, they're just they're letting him fly. And I think that would carry over too.
Sure.
I absolutely could be looking over, you know, looking past that too far.
He did throw, and I will say, I mean, to your point there, I am looking back now at 2022, because he hit three levels in 2022, and he did throw over 134, based on my rough math here, innings in 2022. So that would, A, be why they clearly were going to run him out there at the end of last year, because he was not even at 100, so it didn't matter. But also, if he was over 130 and then threw 105 in a split roll, getting him to 160 feels well within the realm of possibility. Yeah. I guess I would push back on like 180, but again, then you're just like really kind of split.
Yes. Well, to me, it's the question is, are they going to let him go every 5 days?
Right.
And I'm like, yeah, that's, I don't see like they're going to interrupt that. To me, then it's like, cool, I expect six innings. So then great, there's your 180, mm-hmm. you know? But who knows? The more interesting one to me is actually the one after, which is Grayson Rodriguez, because I've been actually kind of vocal about like my terror of that four seamer from Grayson. And you got right-handers were crushing it, like a 50% plus ICR. It did come down in a little bit in that second half when he needed to return. And I've been back and forth a lot on that one. Honestly, with Glasnow, it's just the fact that he's never, like last year was a career high in innings, 120, and I just can't do it. And it was like, I had him at 12 right before I switched it to 16. I even wrote in my blurb, I'm like, is he 12? Is he 16? I don't know. You made such a good point about innings in a 12 teamer getting replaced by someone is still really good. And that's a good point. And I don't know, man. If you want to take Glasnow at 12, go take Glasnow at 12, guys. Okay. I'm just going to do it with Grayson at 15, because you know what? I think the Orioles are going to win the World Series this year. And they're going to have Grayson Rodriguez going every 5 days. He's stretched out enough to do it. And his stuff can be so much better than it was last year. The changeup and slider are both good and developing, and he's getting better. And as long as he keeps that extension, which is elite on that fastball, he has good enough VAA. Sure, he doesn't get a lot of IVB, but I feel like it's all good enough with that velocity in the fastball. He shouldn't have that high of an ICR. Mm-hmm. And especially when the secondaries get more involved, such a good situation in Baltimore. And it's just so much more fun. So I'm going with Grayson at 15. I thought I was going to have Kyle Bradish ahead of him. Nah, I was like, nah, it's just too good. Grayson Rodriguez, let's go.
It is more fun. We'll give you that. It's more fun.
Thank you.
just for on Glasnow.
Yes.
So go ahead. Here's the thing that I found the video. I think it was Mike Kerlin that first tweeted this video out, which kind of brought it to my attention. Glasnow doing an interview about his injuries, where he basically explained that in 2019, 2020, and 2021, it was the same exact injury. That he had a UCL injury that popped up in 2019, but the MRI came back clean. So he kept pitching. Then in 2020, he had a UCL injury and the MRI came back clean. So he kept pitching. And then after 2021, the MRI still came back clean, but they decided to just do like a cleanup procedure. And what they found was that his UCL was fully intact, but it was off the bone. So that's why the MRI was coming back clean, because the UCL itself was fully intact, but obviously it was an injury.
Right.
So I'm looking at that and I'm like, okay, I'm not saying, oh, Glasnow, now he's healthy, he's going to be 180 innings. But I do think it puts it into perspective a little bit, this idea that he's like an injury prone pitcher, because for 3 years, if it's the same injury that was or a similar injury that was never addressed, it wasn't like he got injured, he fixed it, and he got injured again, and he fixed it, and he got injured again. It was never actually fixed, and it was never actually addressed until after the 2021 season. Now, we understand there were other injuries. I'm not saying like, and then in 2022 and 2023, he pitched, you know, 160 innings, and he was perfect. But I think it's an important distinction to make when thinking about his injury track record.
Sure.
Is that for 3 years, it was essentially the same injury that was never properly handled.
Right.
Which is a little bit like the Cole Reagans thing, where you're like, yes, it's two surgeries, but it's really one surgery, because the first surgery wasn't done
well. That's fine. For me, it's just like, cool, Tyler Glasnow, he needed to get Tommy John. The thing was off the bone. Everything was bad. His elbow, great. And then he has an oblique injury. And then he has cramp and that takes him out. And then he also has a back injury. And I think it was a discussion with, I think it was with Lyman. Maybe it was with Eno. But I believe that guys that are built like Tyler Glasnow are just more prone to being hurt. I mean, when you see these like giant lanky guys, these big frames, it's just, it's harder to stay healthy for a full year. In many ways, and like to see that it's such a variety to me, that is the elbow, sure, fine, elbow, whatever, but then there's also the oblique, there's also the back in there. It's not the first time, I believe, with the back too. It's like, okay, there's more to it than this to me. And I'm not saying that he won't go over 120, but we have to at least acknowledge that, like, of everyone inside this top 16, he has the highest likelihood of having the least amount of innings.
Yes.
Right. And that to me is just, okay, I don't know, as a fantasy manager, that's just not fun for me. Like, that's me. If you want to put that at 12, I understand all the reasons for it. I mean, look, I'm not saying it was a right or wrong decision. We had this conversation last year about Jacob DeGrom, right? Just because of the singular outcome that we got doesn't mean that it was right to pass on him.
Right.
That was just one outcome. Sure. But it was the same conversation, like how much willing are we to put ourselves in risk for Jacob DeGrom? It didn't work out there. It doesn't necessarily mean it was a bad probability to chase. So it's hard to tell. It's just one that is more lopsided in its unevenness to me. And I'm just not going to go for that.
I get it. I am vacillating him to just inside my top 10 to just outside my top 10. And I go back and forth.
Never 10.
I never 10. But it is like, it goes to like this tier conversation that you and I had, where it's like, I could easily see him in this tier of like Bobby Miller, Grayson Rodriguez, like guys who have ace upside, but have question marks of like how much they can get to that.
Yeah.
But I could also like see him, but then it's like, I just don't know that I see him like outside of my top 15. I don't know. So I'll go back and forth. But this isn't about me. But I do think it's an interesting conversation about Glasnow.
It is about you, Eric.
And just the idea of your risk tolerance. And what you're ready to take for that. We have our final tier of this podcast coming up after this break. Our final tier of the top 20. Starts with pitcher number 17, Kyle Bradish. Number 18, Zach Eflin. Number 19, Joe Musgrove. Jumping Joe Musgrove. And number 20, Framber Valdez. What city is this tier and why?
I'm such a city boy. Like, give me something that's nice and safe, nice and easy. I'm going to go to Asheville.
Oh, Asheville. You know what? Asheville, underrated city.
I mean, in some ways, it's getting overrated because I hear about it every moment now. But it's wonderful. I was just there in June. Got to hang out with Josh Mockenson and Jason Collette. It was a great time. It was wonderful.
Yeah.
And that's Asheville. That's just nice. And this is like how I group these tiers, right? You have all the fun things, and then you have the safer ones. You know, and this extends into the next podcast and the next past 20. But Eflin and Bradish and Musgrove and Valdez, not in that order. these guys to me are just like, all right, you know, the floor is higher as far as production. Like, it's not the risk of Grayson Rodriguez, right?
Right.
Sure, there is some injury concern with Joe Musgrove and Eflin, I think more so than the other two. But I feel good about them. Also, the injury risk of Joe Musgrove, talking to Stephen Lyman, very much feeling like weird issues, and as long as, you know, everything was fine, it shouldn't be lingering for Joe. So, and like dropping a weight on his toe, cool, great. And then I felt like the elbow and bursitis and the shoulder stuff was just more of him trying to get back up to speed faster than he should have been. And Eflin, I actually almost had him at 12 as like, cool, I expect him to go every 5 days or so. But then I was like, no, Nick, you can't do this. I remember what my main thoughts have been all off season, which is that Eflin, he had a peak season And I know that the Rays really helped, and the cutter is just such a difference maker for him. And really him having five pitches allows his four seamer to all of a sudden be this good pitch upstairs at two strikes where it shouldn't in any way be good. And it is great because he just uses it so sparingly upstairs as a strikeout pitch. But it does feel like he just got everything he could out of his arsenal and had that amazing season. Not to say that he won't have another good one. It's just, it won't be that good with Eflin again. So I couldn't put him up that high. He just does not have SP1 potential in the same way as the other guys do for another year to me. So I put him at 18.
I buy that. So I put him at 14, Eflin, because to me, there was like some Logan Webb in that, in the sense that like I understand the innings are likely not the same, right? Eflin does have an injury track record, even if it hasn't been recent. A lot of like knee issues, which I guess slightly better than arm, but you know, whatever. And as I'm saying this out loud, I'm thinking like maybe I do need to be more cautious given the injury concerns. But what I mean is like there's a safety, I think, in what Eflin does of being like a solid, you know, mid threes ERA pitcher on a good team with, I think, more strikeout upside than Webb, given the recent changes.
Yeah, it's weird because I agree with you and I don't at the same time.
Fair. There are three major changes for Eflin, right? I mean, you already mentioned the cutter. He added a sweeper and he threw his curveball more, which is what everybody wanted him to do when he was
right.
In
it was just a better pitch. It was more consistent because he wanted to do it before. He just never had it.
So like check on three things that the Rays changed that all worked out. Some of which we identified when he was in Philadelphia and others that we didn't. I do think that the decrease in walks and the better whip is, even if it doesn't sustain to the extent that it was before, I think it's also just when you optimize an arsenal and a pitcher can command that arsenal and the pitches work well together, I do think that sometimes that decreases walks and that decreases hits because things are working together better. And then you also have that, like his BABIP was still 295, which is basically his career norm, right? Like it was a higher BABIP than it was in 2022. So it wasn't like he got so lucky with hits. That wasn't like that wasn't really the reason behind his success. So I think what we saw was very repeatable. Maybe not 16 wins, which I know impacts fantasy value, but I don't think there's any reason why he's not getting 12, 13, 14 wins on what should still be a good Rays team.
Does it bother you as much as it does me how much like the player rater at the end of the year is impacted by like he had 14 wins and he had 12 wins?
Yes. Well, that's why I hate, that's like when Adam asked me to go on the podcast with him and talk about either ratios or wins and strikeouts, I was like, absolutely let somebody else talk about wins. Like I just don't want to do it. Like because there's such a difference between a guy with 12 wins and a guy with 15 wins. And I could not tell you why somebody will win 12 games and somebody will win 15. Like there's so many factors that go into that, that it's just wild to me.
I feel like, as a fantasy community, we should be moving towards innings pitched instead of wins or quality starts.
I could see that.
I remember actually sitting down with my friends and trying to design our best, like ideal fantasy league, like for our hometown league and everything. And like, what would it be? And I found myself like creating Ottenew. I was like, Niv, you beat me to it. It's so frustrating about that, but it is a factor of it. And the Rays are going to give Zach Eflin wins, and it's absolutely a big part of it. His ICRA did go up a lot overall from 2022. I mean, it was a 28% in 2022 and then 36% last year. And that 28% was never going to be repeated. And the fact that he had fewer hits allowed, I think speaks to how bad the Philly's defense was in 2022.
Sure.
It's kind of an interesting point. I wish I could have caught that last year. We might have been able to say, like, at the very least, like, well, the defense actually had a big impact on Eflin at the very least. And of course, like he went from a +7 hit luck to a -19, believe it or not, which is crazy. And you look at the BABIP going up for Eflin, right? But that is, oh man. Oh man, that's absolutely bonkers. Anyway, Eflin, yeah, great points about him. He's fine. You're going to be happy with Eflin. Like, it was still a 3.5 ERA at the end of the day, is the weird part to me. And it wasn't like he had a 3. Right. I feel like it should be a little bit better if we're talking about hit luck there. There you go. But it's not going to be a 102 whip. He did have a 3.5% walk rate. I never do the points, but I feel like that was an important one to do. I never do the decimal, and that's crazy. But he's done that for ages, which means he should have that elevated hit per nine a little bit, because that means he's throwing so many strikes. So it does make him a little more susceptible in my view of that ERA going up because of that. That's like the trade-off. You fewer walks, you're generally going to allow more hits, which generally then means more earned runs. But yeah, I mean, he's just safe. Be happy with Eflin, guys. He's not going to have a 27% K rate again, but like, just be happy. And meanwhile, Webb might have his slider back, so who knows who's going to have the higher K rate. You're going to take Webb or Eflin? Who are you taking?
I have Webb higher.
No. Strikeout rate.
Oh, strikeout rate? I'll take Eflin.
Yeah. This part of me is just wants to be different and put it on the board, Adam. I'm going to say Logan Webb has a higher strikeout rate. You're going to be right, but I'm just going to do it. Put it on the board. First one.
Why not? Oh, love it.
Yeah. And we you have Glasnow above Bobby Miller, right? Drop.
I do have Glasnow above Bobby Miller.
Yeah, but the thing is, I'm going to get more wins, so I'm going to win on the player rater.
Yeah, you are.
The
Glasnow one is like the big... It is my, as I continue to toggle these, my rankings have taken a week to put out since we did the show, because I, as we talked about, I'm like trying to do short blurbs on everybody, and it is really helping me with the rankings, but it does take a while.
Oh gosh.
So I'm like at 70 right now, and I just gotta blurb 30 more guys and we're done.
I actually don't know the exact word count yet. I did. So guys, if you don't know, for the top 350, if you're listening to this and you've already seen it, awesome. We're doing something across all of our rankings, which I think is really helpful for everyone. This year we are doing math. I made Scott Chu and Rick Graham do this as well. We're having one massive list for each of the positions, right? So starting pitchers and then hitters and then relievers. And then we are dicing them all up into multiple different groups for you to get quick access to things. So like, for example, I'm going to have my sleeper pitchers. That is really just going to be the blurbs I've already written, but in a grouping, so you can just see like these are the ones and quickly access them. So it's going to be really helpful to do all of it. And we're starting to piece them together. So for example, we're going to have the massive top 350, all the blurbs in one place in like the strategy section at the top. And I don't know how long that one is yet, but I do know how long the 1 through 20 without anything but the blurbs, no tier descriptions, no nothing. And that is 8,300 words. That's just wild. 20 of them. So don't load the site with like a 56K internet access. Okay, guys, I'm sorry for you.
I did want to talk about Bradish too before we're done too.
Oh, we've got time.
Because I put out an article today, which I hope everybody checks out, which you can see on my Twitter, again, which is at SamskyNYC or over at RotoWorld, which was on pitchers who made second half changes and like things to look for in whether they carry over into 2024. And I looked at pitchers who made like clear changes in the second half. Like I hat tipped your conversation with Jameson Taillon, where it was like things clicked for him in the second half, but the changes really were like earlier on in the year. Same thing, like Cole Reagans, like didn't make changes in the second half. He just really only pitched in the second half. But like Kyle Bradish, I think he was really good all year, but I don't know that I had realized as much until I was looking at it about how he like really increased the sinker usage and got rid of the four seam even more as the year went on, which is great because that four seam is not good. And so I worry about him a little bit against lefties, because against lefties he has to throw the four seam a lot.
All he needs to do is throw it inside though. It has cut action. I'm trying as hard as I can to get in contact. Just so like I just want to hear why you won't. And I probably am missing something, you know, because your four seamer is the nullifier to lefties. It can be if you can just get it inside.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Wade Miley going into righties. He's made a career out of this. Like, you could do that to lefties with that four seamer. Ugh.
But I think what I'm saying is, like, I was out. I had him outside of my top 20.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I was like, okay, like, I think, you know, he was a proper, you know, a very common breakout candidate, but I don't think anybody expected him to break out like that. And then, so he should regress. And then you're like, yeah, but he also showed a level and then showed a better level because of changes that he made. So, like, if he regresses, maybe he regresses to just like who he was in the first half of the year, which was still like a 3.334 ERA pitcher, sure, yeah, with decent strikeout rates, but you know, had a little bit of more issues with hard contact. It's like, maybe it's that, but like, I don't know that, like, some of these projections have him back for like an ERA close to 4, which feels really aggressive to me.
No, I can't see that. I think, as you guys know, I don't really focus a ton on ERA and WHIP. I know that sounds wild, and like, that's what the whole game is, Nick. What are you talking about? I'm very much about just what their repertoire is, and generally, is that effective? Is it getting better or worse? And kind of setting these like foundations of what I think last year represented, and is that improving or not? And the way I see Kyle Bradish is, I just think his arsenal will improve and his approach will improve. Now, I think you're right that, like, yeah, he got lucky. Like, he should not have had a 2.83 ERA and a 1.04 WHIP. Like, I just don't think that that's really... If he has the same skill set, yes, he should regress. I think the slider is one of the best pitches in baseball. It truly is just... It's like the old Corey Kluber breaker. And he also gets it... You know, like, he throws it, I think, more than Corey Kluber used to. 31% usage last year. 62% strikes, but just so vicious, too plain. It's so good. It's like a sweeper that also has like an insane drop. Like, how do you do that? You're not supposed to do that. His curveball is also a very effective pitch. I mean, you've talked about this. You've highlighted this. I think you were even saying that he threw it more. That's great. Those should be his two main focuses all the time. As I mentioned, the four seamer, he did have a decent called strike rate in the second half. He was able to sneak it in better. But the reason I don't like it is it has cut action and he tries to throw it upstairs and trying to do like the Cannonball McSanchez of getting called strikes upstairs with it. And sometimes it works, but it's very dangerous. And it was something that made me not excited about him early on. I remember actually this time last year, I was the one who was very out on Kyle Bradish, obviously wrong, but I was out because he didn't embrace that slider as much at the time. He didn't have his curveball as good. And the four seamer, everyone was saying, oh no, he's throwing harder with it, which he did, but that was the problem. And to see, I mean, at the end of the year, at a 46% ICR, but I didn't anticipate that Bradish would make the adjustments that he did. And that was pretty cool. So I think that the overall approach that Bradish has available is that sinker, cool. Inside of righties, great. There you go. You don't need to use that four-seamer against righties. And of course, you have this devastating slider that is just going to destroy them again. And then against lefties, you have that slider for called strikes in the zone back door, and you also have it down back foot. You have a curveball as well that you can throw in there. You have a four-seamer that has cut action that is really good inside, up and in to lefties, and that should be enough. So that makes a whole lot of sense to me. I also think you can throw more than 17% overall curves in there. I just think that the 43% fastball usage that we saw last year from Bradish is probably going to come down to like 35%.
Yeah, I agree.
And something like that, and that's going to be a benefit. The changeup that he's trying to make work, sometimes it works.
Right.
But I'm not really hanging my hat on that. It's that curveball usage goes up, slider's still everything, and then utilizing the four-seamer the right way against lefties, utilizing the sinker the right way against righties. I think there is a real legitimate approach there that suggests, hey, good whip with a 25% plus K rate here.
Yeah.
In a very good situation.
It's funny because hearing you say that, like, I came in with, here's my concern against lefties, right? It's the four seam. And so, but the other side of the coin, as you just pointed out, is, okay, concern, yeah. But there's also a path that gets better, because if he changes the location of the four seam, then it becomes less of a liability against lefties. So you then take a okay, here's my concern, here's the weakness. But if we actually iron out that weakness, then there's maybe even another level. And yeah. we're not saying he's going to be a 2.6 ERA pitcher that's like another level from, you know, what he did the second half. But the idea is like the weakness could also be addressed, and then it you're still seeing another level of growth, which almost kind of balances out that weakness. And so that's where I guess I'm even talking myself into this idea of like, you know, Nola, Bradish, Musgrove, Eflin, to me, are guys who feel like the floor is pretty high. And yep. there is a level that you can see them push to be like maybe a fringe SP1, probably not an actual SP1, but a fringe guy.
Well,
but
I mean,
they might not implode the way
right.
somebody who people who are going to be on the next episode who we say this guy's stuff is elite, but the floor is also like a 4-5 ERA pitcher.
And there's something to be said about Bradish. I mean, like it made me really hard for me to say, cool, where's that middle group of the fun stuff? Because I mean, you could say that Bradish could even be up at 12 if you don't even believe Nola, right? Mm-hmm. For these very reasons. I also do want to say, like, I'm wish casting that Bradish will fix that four seamer. You know, it's something I try and think about a lot is I make those cases. Famous one for me, I don't think a lot of people remember, which is good, is after Michaelis, in like when he first showed up, I thought he was going to get better because the slider usage should increase. And like, that's a really good pitch and it would get more whiffs and everything. That's like a big thing for him. And I recognize that he should regress from the previous year, but he had this path, I thought, to being better than from a skill standpoint, and he didn't do it. Yeah. And he was just worse. And it's one of those elements of like, oh, right. Yeah. There's no guarantee that actually those paths happen. I think that was ultimately why I put Grayson above Bradish, because it's more obvious the path that he wants to go on and improve on.
Right.
With Bradish, I'm trying to like get in contact with him to like see like, hey, maybe I just want to have a conversation with you. I don't know if this is like the smartest path or something like that. I just want to talk about it with you.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I'm glad you brought that up, because we'll end with a pitcher who, like, I guess I don't see the path necessarily to a better result for Framber Valdez.
Yeah.
And again, a 3.45 ERA with, you know, what was his? I see his K per nine with a 25% strikeout rate and a 1.13 whip is not bad. Like, no, you're not like, oh, why is this on my team? But I kind of feel like that might be him. You know, we talked about like being a sinker ball pitcher who gives up a lot of hard contact on a sinker ball, and then changing his cutter, which was worse. Weird. I mean, more strikeouts, but gave up a lot of hard contact. I'm like, he also, it was his best swing and miss pitch, but he doesn't throw it to righties. So he doesn't throw it to the majority of hitters that he'll face. So I don't know, man. I kind of feel like I've got a really good curve, and then I've got a lot of other stuff that is a shoulder shrug that I don't know if it's going to work. And to me, that is, I have some concerns.
Yeah, it's so hard, because on one hand, I'm with you on this of like the sinker is too hard to hit. I even wrote this thing like he will go through the highs and lows and likely hover a 1.15 whip to 1.20 or something like that. You know, it's very possible he does that. He has ground ball tendencies. He doesn't have a reliable secondary pitch to carry him for a 65% strike rate. But then again, it could. The curveball can come back maybe a little bit. Yeah. The cutter that we saw was good for times. And at the end of the day, it's I find myself gravitating towards safety. And man, is there anyone really like at this point safer than Framber Valdez, who of the last 3 years, last 4 years, 1.12 whip, fine, 1.25, but 1.16, 1.13. Like, he's done this. He gets a lot of wins being on the Astros. 12 last year, I think, is depressing his value. He should have more than 12 wins for 198 innings and 31 games on the Astros. He should have more than that. He had 25% of K rate last year. I think that cutter actually will be more of a thing because it is that good. And it was weird last year, but hey, hi, Astros, what's up? They're going to do that. So, overall, I just sat there and thought, yeah, like Valdez is safer than we have one more guy in the next tier, I think. Actually, the next three are part of this tier, I think. I don't know. I don't know where that tier shift is yet. I have to decide. It's probably one more guy in this tier and then two or not.
I'm excited for the next podcast because I have not seen Nick's 21 through 40.
Right. Yeah,
but there are a couple pitchers that come to my head where I'm thinking this guy is Framber Valdez, or they're just so close that I would rank Framber close to this guy. And I'm curious where Nick has him, which I guess we'll see on the next podcast episode.
Yes.
So hopefully you guys all stick around for that one as we continue to go through Nick's top 100. We're not going to do, we're going to go beyond. I mean, we're going to get to as many of these guys.
Oh, we're going to get to like, we're going to do a speed run. I mean, I did 100 pitchers in 50 minutes for PitchCon. Okay. By the way, before you completely seal the deal, people are gonna be like, what the heck? You have Joe Musgrove super high at 19.
Oh, true.
Like I need to say just very quickly, I get it. I think the reason why you see ADPs that are low on Joe Musgrove is because everyone's terrified about the injury. I think we talked about it saying like, look, I think it's because he's actually healthy. If he's gone through all the stuff, he's fine. And he's going to be good for opening day and all of that. Mm-hmm. And Joe Musgrove is just super consistent with everything.
Yes.
It's pretty remarkable to me just how consistently good he is. And his worst ERA in his last 3 years was a 3.18. And that includes two straight 180 seasons in 21 and 22.
Yeah.
It was the weirdness of 2023's injuries that are pushing him down. Yeah, he still had 10 wins in 3.05 ERA and a 1.14 whip and a 24% K rate. Like Joe Musgrove, to me, you are never going to regret having Musgrove on your team. I don't think he's now an injury prone guy forever or something like that. Joe Musgrove's good.
He's inside my top 20 also. I was also intrigued that like in this injury shortened 2023, he actually was starting to throw his changeup more and it was getting decent results. And so I'm just curious what another offseason does for that and that plan, because if you add a better and more used changeup to the slider, the cutter that induces soft ground balls, a curve that he throws to pitchers with, you know, hitters with both handedness, it's just a deep arsenal. Yeah.
And
that
slider got better. He lost in the beginning. He didn't have it. And then he got it by the end of the year. Like it's all good.
No, I fully buy in on Musgrove as well. I'm thankful that you made us talk about him very briefly.
I got to make sure he gets overlooked. I think he's actually surprisingly a sleeper, which is, I don't use that lightly, but like he's undervalued so far from what I've seen.
And it's just nice to end the episode saying nice things.
Absolutely.
So we're going to dive in and keep going. So check us out again for another episode of Pitchers. I am Eric Smolsky, the Pelican.
I'm Nick Pollock, the Lion.
And I'm going to send Nick some house listings in different cities and just see if we can pique his interest anywhere.